Welcome to Galaxy Brains. I'm your host, Alex Thorne, head of firm-wide research at Galaxy Digital. This is a special live edition of Galaxy Brains that we shot last week, November 9th, at PubKey NYC with Nick Carter and Matt Walsh from On the Brink. We mashed the two podcasts together for a live show. It was a lot of fun, and we're going to play it for you. But I should tell you first, note, it is a live show, so the audio is not as good as when we do it in the studio. And also want to thank Thomas Pacchia, Jerk, and others from PubKey for their support, Phineas, our producer, and the team at Galaxy Marketing for their support. This was a lot of fun. We'll probably do something like this again. Before we hop into it, I need to remind you to please refer to the link to the disclaimer in the podcast notes. Note that none of the information contained in this podcast represents investment advice or an offer, recommendation, or solicitation by Galaxy Digital or any of its affiliates to buy or sell any securities. Phineas, let's go ahead and run that live show. I hope you enjoy.
Well, thanks everyone for coming. Really appreciate it. Very humbled to see everyone out here. We'll start it off. Welcome to On the Brink.
And I'm Nick Carter.
Welcome to Galaxy Brains. So this is a mashup of our two podcasts. It's the same. We're just slamming them together, you know? We're going to cover, I think, most of the segments that we do on the two podcasts.
I can't wait to have Bimnet Abibi on.
This is our second live podcast. The first time it was like a monsoon outside and you couldn't hear anything.
Oh, remember? That's right. Yeah.
In Boston. Yeah.
Where was that?
Quincy,
Massachusetts. Yeah, we did a lot. Yeah. Boston Blockchain Week. Live. Shout out Ian Kane.
It was raining.
Yeah. That was just a couple months ago.
No, it was last year.
Oh, you did last year's one. There was one a couple months ago.
There was.
Yeah. You know, again, we're going to do most of the segments if you listen to the shows. By the way, I do have to shamelessly say, if you are not a subscriber and following these podcasts, take out your phone, subscribe. I'm not seeing anyone take out their phone. Everyone already follows?
You
got to rate, like, subscribe. You got to help us so that better content than some of the other podcasts can be diminished while ours is elevated.
I like it. I like that. We got some famous podcasters in the audience, it looks like.
I do. I see a couple. Well, should we just hop right into it with our
Why don't
friend?
We get Bimnet up here? I think there's lots to talk about.
That's usually how we start. So we got Bimnet Abibi. So if you don't know, Bimnet is one of our top traders at Galaxy and on Galaxy Brains. Bimnet gives us the tea on markets and macro.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me. So I guess I'll just ask. I mean, like, what is going on exactly? I guess we should start with crypto markets because Bitcoin has been on a tear. I saw that even Ether was finally catching up a bit today. What's your takeaways on that so far?
Well, I think it's a big deal that BlackRock is launching a spot Ethereum ETF. They wouldn't be doing it unless they thought they were getting approval. And so the markets reacted pretty positively to that news. As we sit here right now, ETH is trading at 2130-ish, which is a year-to-date high. And we've seen the ETH-BTC ratio, you know, bounce over like 9% today. And so it seems like you're getting a little bit of rotation, which I don't know how many folks in this audience actually like that, but we are starting to see, you know, ETH gain a little prominence. And, you know, I think it really all is a function of Bitcoin for the most part, because it leads the way, being the, you know, largest market cap and the main sort of narrative and theme driving the market. But what you have to keep in mind is, you know, with some of these like lower liquidity tokens and, you know, lower volume things, you know, a little bit of flow can send price a lot higher on a percentage basis. And so, you know, I think that's kind of what you're getting in the alt landscape and with Bitcoin.
So how are you thinking about the Bitcoin ETF in terms of who needs to buy just for inventory? So just take demand from retail off the table, structural buying that needs to happen in order for these products to actually get to market.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of wealth management platforms that are going to put clients into this stuff. You know, anecdotally, I was talking to somebody that was doing private wealth at one of these, you know, bougie banks, and she had a client that had $100 million in crypto assets, and, you know, she couldn't really advise that person on the crypto assets because it wasn't part of the platform, it wasn't one of the products that they had, and so, you know, once it becomes, you know, part of the product offerings at a lot of these institutions, and it becomes a higher fee product as well, which is really important, You know, a lot of the private wealth channels are going to push folks into it. In addition, like, I think what folks just have to keep in mind is that, you know, when you work at a bank, like, your most important client is BlackRock. I don't care what bank you work for the most part, especially if you're a US G-SIB, BlackRock asks you to jump, you say how high. And it goes across the entire firm. And so they're launching a new product and they're going to go to all of their various banking partners and be like, what are you doing to help me? Because I'm your biggest client. And so I think there really isn't an area of you know, the U.S. financial system that isn't going to be touched by this product because you've got the U.S.'s largest asset manager involved. Fundamentally, this is... you know, one of the best setups I've ever seen in markets from the standpoint that, you know, I've said this line, you know, tons of times. So, you know, pardon me if you know, this is repetitive for you. But the U.S. capital market is single-handedly the best capital market in history. Absolutely.
America.
It's because they have the nukes and they can print as much money as possible. But you know, and then the ETF is single-handedly one of the best innovations like out there, and people just blindly and passively put money into these things, and it's part of the fabric of wealth creation in the United States. And so when you combine the best capital market ever and one of the best, you know, financial innovations ever, it's going to lead to a pretty, you know, strong result. And then you actually just, you know, start to think about the fundamental, you know, use case for Bitcoin, or, you know, the value I think it provides in terms of, you know, providing a safe haven from just reckless fiscal spending and, you know, reckless monetary policy. And so you've got fundamental catalyst, financial innovation catalyst.
Elephant in the room. What's going on with Solana?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to start the year, one of my favorite things to trade is something that's been beaten down a lot, right? Something that's got base effects going for it. So if something goes from $100 to $1, that's a 99% decline. But if it goes from $1 to $1.50, that's a 50% increase. And so when you deal with things that have sold off a lot, like Solana did at the start of the year, you get the benefit of just the mathematics of it. And so early this year, it got the benefit of a base effect. And then, you know, recently, I think it's just gotten, you know, the wealth effect from Bitcoin. The messaging from the Solana community is pretty simple. They want to be the number three option, right? Bitcoin, ETH, Sol. That's their thesis. And honestly, simple stuff works. And so the Solana community has been pushing that. They've got, you know, Bonk, all the meme stuff. And so they've got a strong community. There was a short squeeze, but high level, you know, Sol's been an outperformer. But to be honest, you know, you could take a monkey and have them throw a dart onto a board filled with alts that are liquid, and odds are you would have done pretty decently well over the past couple of weeks. And so, you know, Solana's great and all, but it's really about identifying when to be in low market cap, highly volatile alts, and that's mainly a function of Bitcoin.
All right, let's step back for a minute. I want to, before we have to move on, I want to ask you about the Fed and macro in general. I saw Jay Powell told someone to shut the effing door today when he was heckled by the Just Stop Oil
people.
He didn't
like those protests.
That was the best thing he's ever said.
you know, this obviously, you know, the price of money, the cost of money is, and the rates are very important for investing. They influence how people look at the risk spectrum. Historically, Bitcoin and other crypto assets have been thought of as a risk asset, even though I think that will change over time, at least for some of them. Where are we going here? I mean, when I pull up Bloomberg, it looks like they're talking about cuts in the spring.
Absolutely. You know, for the better part of this year, I've been in the higher for longer, we need to take rates, you know, significantly higher camp. But recently, what we've noticed in some of the higher frequency data points and some of the better leading indicators that we look at is a material slowdown in, you know, consumer activity and business activity and lending activity. And so I'm firmly of the view that we've seen the high in U.S. interest rates in the front end. And, you know, that likely means that eventually you're gonna start getting to cuts. I'd say the most important, like, recent data points are with respect to the labor market. We've seen, you know, material softness in things like wages and you know, certain hiring metrics. And I've got one guy that I talk to, that's one of the better guys I talk to. He's he's forecasting like a negative payroll number at some point within the next couple of months. And, you know, I think that would come as a shock to a lot of market participants. And so, you know, you're at levels of inflation that are okay. And so if you start to see the labor market crack, you know, the Fed's going to take their foot off the pedal pretty easily. And then I'd tell you the most important thing that happened today outside of, you know, this Ethereum ETF stuff was the 30-year Treasury auction today in the U.S. It was a very weak auction, the weakest auction we've had since November of 2021. We had this thing called a tail, which means that the bid, you know, the auction cleared 6 basis points worse than what was going in. And it tells you there isn't really much demand for all of the issuance that's in the back part of the U.S. interest rate curve. Like that, people don't want to buy 30-year bonds in the U.S. right now. It's a function of how much supply is coming. It's a function of, is the U.S. really in a fiscally responsible situation where they're going to be able to pay you the notional amount on your bond 30 years from now? And I think it's quite telling because that's what the big macro types look at. If your country can't issue 30-year debt and finance itself pretty smoothly, that must mean folks are like a little concerned. And just to give people some context, the 30-year bond today, the amount that was being issued is about double the amount that was issued last year. And that amount is only going to continue to increase. And so fundamentally, like the reason why I'm you know, so constructive on Bitcoin, and I think everybody has their own, you know, reasons, but it really has to do with just the fiscal situation and it being untenable and a lot of folks waking up to it simultaneously. And it's not just domestic, it's abroad. Like there's no rational actors, you know, from the fiscal standpoint.
So maybe switching back to Bitcoin here, you guys have put out some great research and, you know, from your desk, Alex, on the options market. So what's going on with the Bitcoin options market? It seems like this is changing week to week.
Absolutely. Well. So, Bitcoin was pretty quiet recently, like over the past like 3 days, with the exception of today. And I'd say realized vol was around 30, which is pretty neutral. But what we saw happen yesterday was it started to move like a percent every 15 minutes, up and down, up and down. And what I like to call that is hyper vol, right? When there's just, you know, no liquidity one direction or the other, and so. The implied vols in the options market are reasonably low, but when you look at the price action today, I'd tell you they're incredibly cheap. It screams like there's like huge buyers in the market. There's also huge sellers, and so it's not as, you know, squeezy as you know the setup we had a little bit ago. But it's an asset that I'd tell you like if just taking a step back, if I saw something moving like crazy 1% every hour at its trend highs, I'd tell you that it's on the cusp of a breakout, that something like crazy is about to happen. And so fundamentally, I think you're supposed to own vol in the asset. And I think this is one of those assets where you're supposed to own wings all the time. The small probability stuff that, you know, people don't think can get there, that's kind of, you know, what you want to own. And that's what, like, in theory, the next possible squeeze that can happen in the market is a vega squeeze. For those that don't know what that means, that's kind of longer dated vol positioning in the market. And so if Bitcoin goes from being a 60 vol asset in implieds to 80 and you have 100K of vega, right? Like that's 20 vols, right? And you could lose, you know, a ton of money if that happens. And so the market is not really set up for Bitcoin's vol regime to shift. We're talking like firms would go out of business if vols jumped by like 20, 30 vols in the back end. And that's not that crazy, given that you've got the world's largest asset manager about to launch a product. Yep. And so there's a real squeeze potential there. And then with respect to ETH, just briefly, there's nobody selling options in ETH anymore. There's not much vol supply. And historically, ETH has traded, you know, about 10 vols over Bitcoin. And so, you know, if you see Bitcoin vol explode, like you're going to see ETH vol explode. And the world's largest asset manager is also just launching an ETH ETF. So, you know, I think you're in a world where it's going to be spot up, vol up.
Bimnet Abibi from Galaxy Trading, thank you so much for coming on Galaxy Brains and On the Brink.
Great thank stuff, you. Bimnet.
Well, we talked about the ETF. But there's been some news. I'm going to pose this to you, right? So there was, according, I think, to CoinDesk, the SEC is reportedly talking to Grayscale about, I guess, in this case, a conversion. Is that positive, right?
I mean, I think we all knew that all of the sponsors were talking to the ETF because none of the sponsors are talking to anyone else right now. So it's right. Fairly obvious. I mean, I guess the question is, if the SEC does not approve this ETF, how many man hours are being wasted right now talking to these sponsors?
Yeah.
I mean, how many taxpayer dollars are wasted at the SEC in general?
Right.
But they love to waste taxpayer dollars. So that's not a constraint for them.
So I do think the Grayscale ETF is a really interesting case because they don't really have a deadline, right? So it's...
They haven't refiled their 19B4, so there is no clock, right? Like their rejection, their 19B4 process ended with a rejection, I think, in July 22. And then that's what they just basically sued and won over. So now it's like that rejection was vacated. So everyone, yeah, I agree. So it's like they haven't refiled, though, so there's no new clock.
Why don't you explain why the Bloomberg guys are saying it's 90% right now?
I think the Bloomberg guys are pretty smart about the whole thing. You know,
they're here.
Yeah, shout out to Eric Balchunas, James Seyfarth.
Really have the come experts on, in the
up,
audience here.
Come up on stage, explain it to us.
I'm happy to. I'm having. All right, come on up, James. Come on up, James. Yeah.
First guest appearance.
It's great.
All the experts are in the audience.
All right, we're bringing up James Seyfarth from
Bloomberg. We're not the experts,
Bloomberg.
James. Hello.
Bloomberg Intelligence.
Thank you.
So, James, I guess Nick's question is, you know, why are you saying it's 90%?
Why are you so bold?
And also, maybe get into this window concept here where there's a 9-day window. What are people talking about there?
Yeah, so the reason we're so bold is because the court decision was so bold. Like, it was, yeah. They refuted everything the SEC has said for the last, like, 5 years plus. So... In order for the SEC to find some wiggle room and like thread some needle to like deny these things under the 19B4 process is going to be very, very hard. It's going to be very hard to deny these things under that process. You're fine.
All right, cheers. Yes,
honey. Stop
best service in New York right here. Frankie, thank you so much. Hey, tip your bartenders. Tip your pupkey bartenders, please, tonight.
What?
Oh, these are orange pills.
I don't know the drill.
They're giving us the orange pill. That's what it's called. This. What do they say about this drink?
Wait, what's she doing? I didn't sign up for this.
Never had one of these.
Yeah, who said that? Was it Bloomberg
we need to
or somebody?
Be lucid by the end of this show. Please.
Somebody said that. A journalist. They said that this is the worst cocktail in Manhattan. By the way, that's not true.
Good job.
It's actually pretty good. Thank so, you. James. You started to say that the order was such a smackdown on the SEC's prior reasoning for rejecting ETFs. So that made you bold in your call.
Yeah, and also, like, it's just time. Like, we have Canadian ETFs that are operating flawlessly. We have European ETFs that are operating flawlessly. It's just so much better. We have futures ETFs that, granted, if you're trading short-term and you want to trade Bitcoin exposure or now Ethereum exposure, those ETFs are great, right? Like you could get exposure. They're going to trade in line. They're going to move directly in line one for one over a couple days, maybe in weeks. But over a year, multiple year time period, you're going to trail. Right now, year to date, you're trailing 7.5%. If you were going to buy an ETF and they said, yeah, the fee's 7.5% up front, you're like, what? Are you kidding me?
750 bips?
Yeah, like no one's going to buy that. I mean, Grayscale's 200 bips and people are really upset about that
right.
For a good reason. But like, so it's just a better end situation for everyone involved if an ETF is approved. And the courts basically smacked down everything the SEC has said. We now have the Coinbase SSA, which, based on the court decision, honestly doesn't really matter.
Right, not even required, right? So you're talking about the BlackRock, I think, was the first to file one where they moved the surveillance sharing agreement to the spot market of regulated sufficient size or whatever. But the court said that the spot market was mathematically identical to the futures market, right? So you wouldn't even need that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to make the argument that, like, you everyone knows, anyone who's been in finance knows that the futures derivative market is based off the spot market. And even if you don't know that, if you look at how Bitcoin futures prices are made on the CME, they're based on the Bitcoin reference rate, which is based off of like 8 spot exchanges. So like the whole process of them denying spot and allowing futures is just completely backwards and broken. And Gary knows it. Like, it's blatantly obvious. Our view is that they've come around to this and they're figuring out the way to do it. Honestly, I think the SSA is more a win for Gary Gensler politically, because he can spin this as, yeah, we don't fully agree with the courts, but now we have this surveillance sharing agreement that we've been asking for a decade. Yeah. And now we have with Coinbase, and maybe others will jump on board. So, like, there's a few other aspects there. So, basically, ARK and 21 shares, the final deadline is January 10th. I will... And if for some reason or some way the SEC, as you said, finds a way with all those man hours to, like, deny these things under that 19b4 process and don't get called back into the court with the DC Court of Appeals, I would be fascinated to read that decision. I'll have to eat a lot of shit for being wrong, but I would love to read whatever the SEC cooks up to, like, deny these things at that point. So absent a Binance DOJ, like, complete, like, blow off investigation happening.
So what's this window we're in right now?
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about the window.
Yeah, so...
Are we in it? We're in the window.
We're starting now.
We're right? in the window. But honestly, this blew up way more than I intended. I feel like there's too
Twitter
much going on our tweets that me and Balchunas are putting out.
Yeah, literally every trader has you guys on alerts, I think, to be honest.
Yeah, so...
You're the main character. That's not good. You don't want to be the main character. Take it from me.
Nick knows, yeah.
If I had to take advice from anyone on this topic, I think you're probably one of the best people to take
Don't do it.
Basically, when you get denied, or when you, this whole process, there's all these delay periods. If you've been paying attention, there's all these, like, oh, this has been delayed or denied or what have you. After there's a delay period, specifically this one instance, there is a period where you can submit a public comment, which a lot of people have posted some of those public comments, and then there's also this other period. But essentially, that period ended yesterday. So the SEC wasn't going to make a decision. That Cointelegraph tweet... Granted, it went out, and I was like, oh, my God, is this real? And then more research. Within a few minutes, I was one of the first people to say this is definitely fake. So I'm going to take credit for that. But it was not going to happen because they were in the comment period. Like, they're waiting for public comment. They have to wait for public comment, as far as I'm concerned. Gensler kind of skimps on the rules a bunch, so I wasn't completely shocked. But essentially, that period ended yesterday. So now, all of a sudden, nothing is up for comment. Their first 9 filers can be basically decided at any point now between January 10th.
What happens on Jan 10?
Jan 10 is the ultimate deadline for ARK and 21 shares.
Yeah, and why wouldn't they? My understanding of this logic is if they're going to approve them eventually, right? Most of the other guys are like in March or even a couple after that, the final deadlines. So they wouldn't like deny ARK and 21 shares and then in 2 months approve everyone else.
Yeah,
is like, the thinking, right?
Yeah, exactly. What's going to change between ARK and 21 shares on January 10th and BlackRock on March 14th or 20th or whatever? I don't know the exact date.
Right.
But the reason why it's an 8 or 9 day window is essentially that Hashdex and Franklin Templeton, their deadlines for one of their deadline periods where the SEC would have to delay or deny or approve is November 17th. Global X is November 21st. So if the SEC wants to do kind of like what they did with the Ethereum futures ETFs, which if anyone was paying attention, they lined them all up and was like, if you're ready to go, you can launch on this date and you can go. So if they want to do that with all 12 filers, there's like a window here before November 17th where they could do that, potentially November 21st. But if I'm being honest, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think the SEC is ready to do it. But if they're focused on doing all 12, they'll do it then. That said, like, there's 9 other issuers before them, including Invesco Galaxy,
yeah.
Where like they could be a decision could come anytime between now and January 10th. But if they want to do all 12, the window is right now.
Very interesting. All right.
That was great.
What about, hey, well, I guess what you saw the Grace, the BlackRock, like, Delaware court, like, the construction of their whatever it is, an LLC or whatever, the corporate filing, but then they also filed something else with NASDAQ, or was it the 19b4?
Yeah, they filed a 19b4 at, like, just after 4 o'clock today. Wow. So one of the things I wonder is, like, if whoever that person was on Twitter, I follow them because they've tweeted.
I saw you talking
before.
About this.
I wonder if they, like, would have actually filed the 19b4 today, because if you look at the BlackRock, the iShares Bitcoin Trust filing, it was 7 days before anyone caught wind of it, and as far as I'm concerned. I didn't see it till 7 days later when they filed with the SEC. So I wonder if BlackRock, like, would have waited the full, like, a week or whatever to put it out.
Oh, but because it came out on Twitter,
it blew up. I mean, everyone saw the price of Ethereum skyrocket on that news. So I wonder if they would have put it out today. But either way, they filed. They officially are in the ETH spot race. So there's six people now that have filed for Ethereum spot.
All right, James Seyfarth from Bloomberg Intelligence, our friend.
Shout out, James.
James.
Follow him on Twitter,
that,
too.
That was literally better than we... I mean,
That was great. That was off the cuff. That's what happens when you do it live. We're doing it live.
We didn't know any of that stuff.
No. Okay, so let's stay on the SEC for a minute. There was a really interesting Inspector General report from the SEC's Inspector General. I believe it was the Inspector General report that, among other things, was talking about why they're having trouble hiring and retaining experts in the digital asset markets. It's because the report stated because they require any person at the SEC who works on crypto to sell all their crypto, all their Bitcoin.
It's crazy. Can you imagine trying to understand Uniswap without actually using it? Like, how do you academically wrap your mind around this industry without actually using it?
You know, I have some tea as well. I was in D.C. yesterday. I flew in for this specifically.
Let's go.
And apparently this holds for the entire federal government if you're regulating anything that touches crypto.
Crypto specifically.
So, yeah, oh, wow. It's not just the SEC.
But you can own stocks and, you know, and boons and...
But we have politicians that own Bitcoin publicly.
But they aren't the regulators that are focused. So
I see.
If you're in any way financial regulator, you touch crypto.
I'm not... I don't know the answer to that, Thomas. but, like...
I don't think it's regulated.
The federal transportation department can drive cars. The SEC can own stocks.
Yeah, at the conference I was at yesterday, Gensler said he owns index funds. He owns stocks.
That's typically what they do is they say, first of all, you probably have to pre-clear, certainly if there are individual equities. And this is true in finance. But if you own mutual funds or indexes, or separately, you can move all, like typically the presidents, when they're president, they move their assets into a non-discretionary account where an advisor.
Or a blind trust.
Right, a blind trust. I mean, there's plenty of solutions other than telling people to sell all their Bitcoin.
Doesn't it seem like a quick fix for the SEC? So you regulate registered investment advisors, they pre-clear trades.
Right.
Just take what you already wrote for the people that you're going after and just adopt it yourself.
I could see somebody saying, I care about the future of Bitcoin or crypto in the U.S. I'm a lawyer, maybe, or a financial lawyer. Like, you know, I could, you know, let me see if I can help the SEC, like, do it, maybe even do a better job, like, right? But, like, sell my Bitcoin to do that? Like, are you out of your mind? Sell my Bitcoin and then work for a government salary at the same time?
I mean, it goes back to what I said originally. I don't know how you understand the pace of progress in this industry without actually using the products.
You're just, like, maniacally on, like, Bitcoin Twitter, just, like, and crypto Twitter, but, like, watching things like days like today when people are, like, you know, sharing laser eye GIFs and, like, and you just, like, observe it and take it in, but you can't participate?
It's the same thing that happened in New York Times. New York Times had the same rule. Nathaniel Popper, one of the most bitter men.
And one of the earliest journalists to cover Bitcoin.
Early guys, wrote a great book, couldn't own Bitcoin, and so he's so bitter now.
We were talking about this earlier. That's still one of the best books I've ever read about Bitcoin.
What's this one called?
Digital Gold.
Digital Gold.
Back in 2014.
Yeah,
that was a good book.
Okay, let's go to another related topic. So,
is this SAB 121? Do you have
a
bingo card?
That's too SAB 121, dude. I don't know.
It's too esoteric.
Brinkers know SAB.
Strange, arcane SEC accounting bulletin guidances. No. Tom Emmer, I believe I guess some changes happened in the Republican House leadership, but I think he's still the whip.
He's the whip. Yep.
So he's the second most powerful member of Republican House leadership. He introduced an amendment to the government funding bill that would defund the SEC's enforcement efforts until comprehensive crypto regulation is passed.
Emmer's the best. So there's an appropriations bill right now that had a ton of amendments that got bolted onto it this week.
Yeah.
One of them was proposed by Representative Emmer. And it says that the SEC is basically shut down as it relates to crypto enforcement until there's a market structure bill passed in the United States, which, you know, frankly, is not going to be anytime soon, in my opinion. We might get a stablecoin bill, but who knows? I think these amendments kind of fall off the back of the wagon, but it's a statement.
I heard some tea lately, actually, on legislative. So this
Nick's all about the tea.
I got tea.
So what is tea?
Tea is Zoomer for gossip.
All right, thank you.
I am not a Zoomer, but
thanks for letting me.
I learned that from
dude,
the young
let
folks
him cook,
on
dude.
TikTok.
Let him breathe.
I have been reviewing TikTok to understand how it is that these people operate. So the tea is that there is a swap deal in the Senate. The Senate Dems wanted to pass the Safer Banking Act, which would basically preserve the ability of cannabis businesses to get banking and potentially be good for crypto as well. And then in the House Republicans wanted to pass the stablecoin bill. And so there was a swap deal agreed under our former speaker, Yeah, who?
You mean Kevin McCarthy?
McCarthy. Yeah. So now he's out. So that was the deal. There was a deal on the table.
I see.
Safer for stablecoin bill.
Interesting.
However, now we have a new speaker, Johnson.
He's never spoken about crypto.
Johnson hasn't spoken about crypto, and he said something like, if you want to understand my views on stuff, consult the Bible. Mm. And so I did that. And the Bible, actually, I couldn't find anything on crypto in there. I looked. Yeah.
So we don't know his views, but we still have Emmer as the number two, a big, certainly knowledgeable about digital asset policy and markets. We have Pat McHenry, charge of House Financial Services, not only a knowledgeable, but a straight up advocate. I mean, I used to say when we were big on Clubhouse during COVID, he used to join the Bitcoin Club.
Did he really?
I'd say he's strong at the level where he could be like on the board of directors of a crypto startup. Yeah. He's that knowledgeable about
it. He's good. You said, what did you say? You had an anecdote about him earlier telling me.
I've been in rooms with McHenry where he's sitting down with people that built protocols of publicly launched tokens, and he's going head to head with them on how it works and the regulatory impact. Yeah. So I think he's super knowledgeable. So but
there's a lot of knowledge there.
On the stablecoin thing, I think we got to be really careful here. So there's a world where this stablecoin bill gets passed and it says you can only launch a stablecoin as a federally chartered bank in the United States.
This is what the Democratic side of the committee wanted, right?
Elizabeth Warren wants. And so, you know, the problem there is banks are not allowed to launch stablecoins.
Right.
So you say you can only launch a stablecoin if you're a bank, but banks are not allowed to launch stablecoins.
Right, because then the OCC, the FDIC, and the Fed all say you can't do it.
Yeah, so we need to preserve the state path is the message there.
Yeah, it's a Trojan horse, actually, the stablecoin bill. If they don't preserve the state pathway, it's no good. In this country, we have two ways to charter a bank, at the state level, at the federal level. The Fed has tried to quash the state pathway this year. That's what they've been trying to do. That's destructive for this country. We can't allow that to happen. We can't end up with a stablecoin bill that's just federal regulation for stables.
Yeah.
That's the current debate in the House, actually.
So. Right. My understanding of, and I don't know where it is at the moment, but part of the dispute was about who would be the regulator and would there be a state pathway, with the Democratic side of the aisle wanting it to basically be owned by the Fed, aka national Fed member banks, and the Republicans wanting other entities like states. At one point, we were talking about non-banks, right? Like, why shouldn't a fintech be able to launch one?
Well, it's not that we want something as an industry that is above and beyond what exists today. So if you just look at the traditional financial services world, you have sub-custodians that are established in banks. You have sub-custodians that are established internationally. And so it's not that we're asking for special treatment. It's that we're asking for equal treatment.
Let's on a related topic, but moving on, talking about the banks and the bank regulators, let's talk about Operation Choke Point. I feel like there's some dust has settled since Choke Point 2.0, I should say, right? With the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate, and then whatever happened at Signature. It's kind of like, we're going to talk about some people, where is this person? It's kind of like what happened at Signature Bank, right? I still feel that we haven't gotten the full story there.
I agree.
Where do we stand on this? It's been a bit quiet, I think, since the big, for a couple months.
I mean, frankly, you know, the people involved at Signature and Silvergate haven't spoken out because they're afraid to. But what happened at Signature was a travesty, specifically Signature. And what we had was the two stablecoin fiat clearing settlement networks, SEN and Signa, were destroyed through the banking crisis. And the OCC did not allow them to be sold in that process of acquiring the bank assets. Subsequent to, you know, those banks going down, all the other crypto-focused banks were then harassed. Customers, Cross River, the, you know, MVB, Bankprov, they're all under immense pressure from the federal regulators. They're not allowed to have their crypto-focused deposits go above 15%. That's still the case today. So basically, being a crypto-focused bank is de facto legal in America today. It's kind of possible to get a bank account as a crypto startup, but if it's in anything complicated, an FBO account, anything like an exchange would need, it's basically impossible. So Operation Choke Point 2.0 is not over. However, the Safer Banking Act could potentially alleviate this if the language is tightened up. So that's something to watch, actually, the Safer Act. Go read that.
You know, it's funny because it just drives more capital into Tether. at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So, hey, we hate Tether, but let's enact this choke point 2.0 thing and just drive all the capital into Tether.
Tether and USDC were pretty much a parity in November 2022. Right now, Tether's at 86 bill and USDC, I think, is 23 bill.
It's down like 50%.
So basically all they've achieved is pushing capital in
the Tether. Charts are effectively inverse. Look at the supplies, they're one is up and one is down only.
How is that what, you know, bank regulators want?
That's what my question with the stable has always been. You talk about BIMnet's point about how there's not the same bid for U.S. debt that there has been in the past, right? They're issuing more of it, but meanwhile, also a lot of the buyers of it are not buying it. Some are selling it. Some sovereigns are selling, right? Tether is like the 22nd, if you believe
they're
holding.
Yeah, they're top 25.
Yeah. Owner of U.S. debt. So it provides a marginal buyer for U.S. debt. It obviously extends the reach of the U.S. dollar dramatically.
Yeah,
I don't mean literally that Tether should be the one, but like the stablecoin is a killer app.
Hamas had $1 million of Tether, so we have to destroy the whole thing.
Well, let's get into that then.
That was the next topic, because Nick, you were very vocal in pushing back on this big article. I'm going to ask you to tell the story of how what you got involved in, what happened, but I'll set it up with just saying the Wall Street Journal published a story, we'll call it three or four, whatever it was, saying that Hamas had received significant donations and funding through cryptocurrencies. And they cited two firms, Elliptic and BitOK. And then subsequent to that story, Senator Elizabeth Warren wrote a letter to the White House or to the federal government saying basically like, look at this big problem. Like, what do you need from Congress to do, right? And exclusively citing the Data in the Journal story. But then things got fishy. Some of the community started squinting at that data a little more closely and saying, wait a sec, like, is this even right?
Yeah, sometimes if you just tweet about stuff hard enough, you can actually change things in the real world.
Let's go.
That's actually a true fact.
We're tweeting pretty hard. I loved
it. You can tweet like crazy, because the story actually was that I had torn a ligament in my foot playing padel. So the Wall Street Journal claimed 130 mil was raised by Hamas. Raised is what they said. Based on the Israeli intelligence published a list of addresses on Binance and Tether, mostly Tether, that they wanted to freeze.
Tron.
Tethertron. Yeah. We love Tethertron, number one crypto killer app. And as it turns out, that included a lot of ancillary firms that weren't strictly Hamas affiliated. Elliptic had written a piece about that saying the number is, you know, 130 roughly, along with this other firm, BitOK. The Wall Street Journal cited them. I actually can't fault them too much, but I think it's always morally good to cyberbully journalists, so I have no regrets. And then Elizabeth Warren cited them, so this is like a game of telephone where we just got further and further away from the truth. In the end, I couldn't actually tell you what the real number was, unfortunately.
Well, have you been tweeting hard enough at them?
I don't like tweeting error. I don't think they like me very much.
I'm sure they don't.
So order of magnitude, single-digit millions.
So you started asking for better data and really questioning this hard.
Elliptic corrected the record.
Yeah.
And then the Wall Street Journal, to their credit, actually issued a correction, which never happens.
Right. But since, too, you also started a crowdfunding exercise to say, you know what, we have a broad crypto community. Like, there are tons of, I mean, you got Zach XPTs and other people that are.
Yeah, he actually DM'd me, but he didn't contribute.
So you asked, you said, look, use the open source data, use the block explorers, use whatever you have. We'll give out bounties. Was it 21 bounties?
Yeah, so I was going to do 10 grand, so 21 $500 bounties. People then sent me another 40 grand.
Yeah, like other companies in the space.
Like for
they
no
said, this
reason.
This is great. We want to help fund this.
And the whole thing was on a Coinbase wallet. I don't recommend it. On my phone.
But you.
That I hadn't backed up. It was just a wallet I had hanging
like,
on my
it's
phone.
It's like, is this like financial management? Like wealth management?
Yeah, I'm a serious venture capitalist. So I had 50 grand on my phone. If I dropped my phone, that money would evaporate it completely. I was like, oh God, I got to give out these bounties as fast as possible. I got to get rid of this shit.
But you've gotten a lot of great submissions.
Like 100 people submitted serious, intense analysis.
So where did we land? Like, what's the sort of balance of what the open source world is telling us about that?
Kind of confirming what Elliptic said in their retraction, which was it's a very small fraction of the total 130 that had anything to do with Hamas. We don't have the precise number because it's kind of unknowable, unfortunately. I wish I could give you the precise number.
Yeah.
I don't have it.
But you think single-digit millions?
Single-digit mil, possibly less. Yeah, I'm still pushing Chainalysis, TR Amyloptic,
etc. Yeah, to also take a stab at it. Because remember, they published, I didn't know this, but Niraj from Coin Center resurfaced this when this happened. Reuters wrote a story in like April of this year. And the headline of the story was that Hamas is effectively begging its people to stop sending crypto because they're getting caught. It's highly traceable.
I mean, and so that's like, the context you can't omit is the Al-Qassam Brigades, which is part of Hamas, specifically said, stop donating Bitcoin to us because the donors are being targeted.
Right.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, yeah, it's Israeli intelligence knows how to use blockchain explorers.
Right. As it turns out, blockchains are public records that are indelible.
Okay, this is great, by the way. Nick's feed on Twitter, I'm sure most have seen it. It's filled with these awesome stuff. He's got a great roundup, a Medium piece? I forget what you wrote something.
Yeah, so I wrote everything up in a Medium piece.
Yeah, check it out.
Please read it.
It was an exciting time. Because also, I was in Washington when that was happening a couple weeks ago. CoinDesk had a State of Crypto Policy and Regulation Summit. And this question it was important work to be done because this was resonating at a time around Washington.
We pushed back well.
Yeah.
We pushed back well. In fact, in the hearings, I think it was in the Senate. There were certain folks that were pushing back. Even if it seems like everyone's against you, like, we can change things.
I think the thing
if we tweet hard enough.
Yeah. The other thing is, too, is, like, I mean, nobody wants terrorists to have funding. I don't care whether it's dollars or Bitcoin or anything.
But here's the thing is, like, Binance and Tether are actually pretty good about freezing.
Tether has frozen thousands of addresses.
Like, crazy. Like, Tether is not, like, a decentralized stablecoin, right? They freeze. So, like, we've actually been quite effective at interdicting these flows earmarked for terror organizations.
All right.
That's context you have to include.
Let's move on a little bit we got a couple more, and then we're going to bring Thomas from PubKey up here.
And then we'll do a Q&A.
And then we got a Q&A coming. But first, Thomas from PubKey. That's his name.
You heard his name.
Not yet. In 1 second. I want to go really nerdy into Matt's top topic. One of his top topics, not his only top topic. Market structure. One thing I saw is that CME open interest on Bitcoin futures surpassed Binance. So literally, CME is the largest venue for Bitcoin futures in the world now. What else are you thinking about? But does that mean anything? What does that mean to you?
I don't think people have a full appreciation for how fast market structure is changing as it relates to institutional flow coming into this industry right now. So within the past probably 6 months, you've seen the launch of 3 ECNs, which are electronic communication networks, similar to how FX is traded. They do not take custody of client assets. So it's typically a tri-party custody arrangement where the trading is separated from the custody. So we're seeing a lot of activity in that category. We're seeing a lot of makers, a lot of takers on board to some of these venues. I think the net is that Binance is still the largest player by a long shot, but I think it'll look a lot different a year from now. I think there's a lot happening behind the scenes here. Obviously, it would help if U.S. banks were allowed to custody crypto. It's kind of crazy that BlackRock is launching an ETF.
Can you explain briefly why they're not?
SAB 121. Boo.
But yeah, I think the net is that the market structure is shifting here pretty quickly, and obviously CME is a big part of it.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of volume, and I tend to think that that volume on CME is from a lot of traditional investors. Let's bring him up, Thomas Pakia, friend
Pakia,
founder of PubKey, founder.
Mr.
So I have one question.
What do we say? Are you founder? What's your title? What's your PubKey title?
A pleb.
Pleb of
PubKey. Pleb.
Welcome, Thomas.
Okay. Just trying to do a thing day by day.
Day by day.
Day by day. Over under. SBF.
We're going to do this. Hold on. But first, tell us about PubKey.
A little commercial for PubKey.
To be clear, we are recording this, and we're going to run this on our feeds.
So to be clear, this is the part that they're going to cut. PubKey is just a bar, right? It's not a Bitcoin-themed bar. I bristle at the description that it's a Bitcoin-themed bar.
But you're wearing an orange sweatshirt.
I am. Like, it's in our DNA. It's not our identity. Because nobody talks about the internet, nobody talks about electricity. I think that that's where Bitcoin is ultimately going. right? It's in our DNA, and we talk about these things. We create a forum for these things. I think the concept of third places, right?
Yes.
So, like, home and work. A good friend of mine, Drew Armstrong, is the one that, like, deeply ingrained this
in our
early, like, philosophy at PubKey. Deeply indebted to him and his business partner at Cathedra, AJ. You know, these concepts of third places as we went into COVID have become more and more important. So you're home, you're at the office, RIP offices. And then the third place is, we're talking about like churches, right? Like, you know, community cafes. Centers.
But parks, people have to pay you cafes. Money to be here.
Huh?
Which is very convenient.
What?
People have to pay to be here.
Well, you have to pay to go to church.
Look, I mean, that's rent free. Is expensive and so are taxes. I mean, if we're living in the real world, like, yes, it's an operating business, but like we want to facilitate a community that feels like they're, you know, at a place that they belong and that they
really
want to
you
be.
You do a lot because in this
room. It's not like
room,
we have dues like the university club. Like, you know, women room, don't have to come out of a cake.
You guys do a lot of meetups. You have a lot of people. I mean, us being one that's happening now, but you do lightning, mining, right? Like you help support the community yes. in that way.
So every Thursday we have Bitcoin programming on a monthly basis. We have monthly mining, monthly lightning. We have a mystery bag. In 2024, we have a couple of partnerships that we're not quite ready to announce yet, but these are really, you know, systemically important issues of the day that we want to help elevate. And particularly being in New York, New York is a bit derided. I think that New York City as, you know, an entity is the only thing that's been declared dead more frequently than Bitcoin itself. It's not dead. We're not fucking dead.
Let's go NYC, baby.
It's fine. Everything's fine.
I also wanted to say, though, that the bartenders here are excellent. They actually make great cocktails. They're all talented. And the food, which unfortunately we shut down during
cheese.
This show.
We shut down
but the
food
is incredible at PubKey.
Shout out to
no
Cheese.
Food.
Yeah.
No
all
food.
Right, listen, but
cheese.
I have a question for you guys. And then I want to
before we go into Sam.
I want to help do the Q&A. I have a question, though. On the over-under, no. over-under. And I'll tell you. I'll leave.
Hold on.
What was their podcast?
Oh, that was Bad Boys.
That was Bad Boys?
Hasu is not a bad boy. He's a good boy.
He's a good boy?
Uncommon Core was one of the
we like Hasu.
Yeah, I'm sure he's fine. I haven't received a direct apology yet, but like,
FTX.
You know. Where's Kyle?
We do have to talk about FTX.
My question is the over-under. I think that SBF walks free, alive,
no.
outside of prison,
no.
2 years max.
No.
Oh, what? 2 years max.
35.
What are you guys talking about?
42
says
years.
20.
35.
I have to caveat it in this post-Epstein era. I got to caveat it.
Oh
alive. Walks.
Oh my
free.
God. 35.
2 years
I,
max.
I would guess he gets, I'm literally making this up, we'll call it 30 or 35 sentence and is out in 15 to 20 would be my guess.
Oh, but in federal, you have to serve 80% of the time.
Yeah, you can't get out early.
You don't
is
get
that true?
Any, yeah, it's not that good behavior.
Oh.
Plus, he's not
going
to
be
I'm
yeah.
guessing
he's
he'll
a good
get
boy.
Sentenced
he's
with about 30 to 35 is my guess.
Like
but, I mean, he is up for 110 is technically the full amount.
I think
of
it's
going to
be like a
counts.
Scooter Libby.
So I guess who cares?
Pardon.
Who cares about SBF? But
President Vivek is going to
pardon
him.
Where is Sam Trabuco on all this?
Yeah, where is Sam Trabuco?
Where's Trabs?
Maybe a little Mark Rich.
Where is Sam
Trabuco? The only thing that I can think of, Alex, I'd be curious to get your thoughts, is... You know, there's this Chinese money laundering bribery case that they were not able to bring because
yeah.
the Bahamanians would not have extradited him.
Is that why it happened?
Brought. Yeah. So they
Wait,
could only charge him
that's
on...
That's weird.
They found out about it later after they extradited him. They got to the bottom of it. Presumably it was Caroline Ellison that
But the Bahamanians said that they wouldn't send him back if that issue was one of the charges?
The Bahamanians said you can only charge him with what you're telling us you're going
right
to
now.
Charge him.
Right now. I see.
Right now. And subsequently, they found out that Sam Trabuco, SBF, and the whole rogue band of misfits bribed Chinese officials.
The FTX crime family.
So my guess is that Trabuco is state's witness right now, and he's the star witness of the next trial.
Is bribing Chinese officials worse than bribing U.S. officials?
I don't think it's a good look.
But there are top guy.
Yeah, it is illegal.
As Americans,
right.
there are top guys
so
on
wait,
the front
wait, the
lines.
Story, but the story was something, what, like some amount of customer money on FTX was seized
Tether.
By... So Tether FTX Tether was seized by
Chinese. $1 billion.
Yeah, it was like $1 billion.
Why was we don't know why it was seized yet. So there's a lot to learn, but it was seized by Chinese authorities, and then Sam bribed them to get it back. Is what we're told, right?
That's just
the allegation from this.
That's just responsible stewardship.
That's what came out in the trial.
Customer funds. Sometimes you gotta pay a bribe.
Why did they ban Bitcoin mining in China when they did? What was the deciding factor?
That was
in
right
your
around
opinion?
Then. That might have been right around then.
Like, you know, 21. You have a lot of like, you know, overarching macroeconomic issues, and I think that that's something that we just sort of like glossed over, right?
Yeah.
Like, why did it happen then?
I have a weird
that's a good
theory,
question.
Which is I think it was Beijing consolidating power relative to the periphery, which they do periodically.
Beijing consolidated power then? They didn't have it before?
No, they were. Yeah, that's what they've been doing. But the regional administrators were making too much money based on basically bribes from the
so
miners.
So was it a capital flight issue? I've also heard like high power transmission lines, right? Because
well,
like
also,
the coast...
China built a huge network of high voltage transmission,
yeah,
which meant that all of a sudden these weren't stranded pools of electricity in Yunnan and Sichuan,
yeah,
and all of a sudden you were a rival in consumption with the Chinese industrial sector.
I blame Cardano.
I
think Cardano was possible. The problem.
I don't know what Cardano is.
Cardano?
I don't know what that is.
Can I open this up for Q&A? Do you have anything else you want to hit?
One more topic, please. I think, before Q&A is...
Cardano.
I mentioned this in the rap, but I said the Fidelity Mafia. All four of us worked at Fidelity on the stage. Thomas worked at Fidelity. Shockingly.
I took the bullets. It was like a first man through the door
Matt,
situation.
Matt in particular was working on Bitcoin very early at Fidelity.
I joined in 2015.
Yeah. When did you leave?
Huh? 2017?
Oh, okay.
Like so, early 2017?
Sounds better when you say it that way.
Huh? Yeah. Like we extend the early and the later.
Matt, though, I mean, look, Fidelity has Bitcoin ETF filing.
Still so-
they have Bitcoin and ETH custody. They have, I saw that FMR hired a head of crypto and token research. They've got Bitcoin on Fidelity.com now, Bitcoin and ETH. They've got the 401k product. I mean, they're deeply live. Like, wasn't it just like you and like a couple other dudes at like Abby's
the
direction
macro,
like
the
7 years
guys,
ago? Okay,
good
okay,
job,
sir.
Matt.
Sir.
I definitely don't take any of the credit.
This Patagonia vest man about Fidelity, if you'll allow me.
I don't take any of the credit for it. I remember when I was graduating business school, I had a couple job offers, and I remember interviewing with Fidelity, and it wasn't the highest price offer, but I remember telling my wife, like, everyone I met was super smart, and everyone I met I feel like I could, like, hang out with. So just looking back on that journey.
They were chill? That's what you're saying?
Yeah, everyone was just, like, a really good person.
Yeah.
And it was a great culture.
Do they win this game? Like, can they beat, like, can BlackRock swoop them?
I
mean, when we talk, Fidelity's the third largest asset manager in the world. BlackRock's the first. Like, can... Abby's been on this hobby horse for almost a decade or however long.
Fidelity's more crypto native.
I think Fidelity's going to clean up in this market because it takes so long to get up the learning curve, and it came from the top of the house at Fidelity. So obviously you're going to have runts like the three of us that are interested in crypto and Bitcoin back in the day.
Oh, we used to work there.
And, you know, but
wait, how many people in this room worked at Fidelity? Because I know there's a bunch of others. There's more. Where's Sam?
How many people are related to somebody that works at Fidelity? That's the easiest way to get a job there.
But I think there's a lot of things that just take a lot of time to learn. And so you see these new financial services firms that are coming into the quote-unquote blockchain industry, and they're talking about, like, tokenizing private blockchains. And it's
blah, blah, blah.
It's like, yeah, we talked about that in 2015, and
right.
we got rid of it, right?
Yeah.
So there's a learning curve here, and they're just so far up. And I don't know. It's great to
literally
see.
They're the largest retirement plan administrator in the country. They offer Bitcoin exposure there. They're one of the largest brokerage platforms. They offer, I mean, they really have actually built it out through all their channels. It's quite
let's slow down. They're not sponsoring this podcast just yet.
When PubKey,
we got to leave a little room to run here.
It's a Q&A.
Let's get to the Q&A.
Who do
questions?
We got?
Thomas. Thanks everyone for listening.
We got David Hoffman of Bankless.
He's actually the biggest podcaster here.
This is subscribe to his podcast.
It's not even close.
You already are.
All right, David, keep it to Bitcoin, though.
So there's a...
What do you think of Solana?
I think there's a renaissance in Bitcoin building going on, perhaps led by our shooting star, shining star, Nick Carter here. At least in the VC space. Like, there's optionality with deals coming from venture capital to build on Bitcoin, which is exciting. That's new. That's one of the newer things. But I'm wondering your guys' takes about the actual value capture of these potential deals, because it's been one of my philosophies that the Bitcoin philosophy is to more or less remove things that are not value accretive to BTC specifically, and removing the app layer or the surrounding infrastructure layer around Bitcoin, because what is Bitcoin other than BTC? And so I'm wondering your guys' opinions about the actual value capture of venture deals around Bitcoin in this space.
Well,
that's a great question. Bitcoin as a platform.
I see some Ordinals folks in the audience here. Shout out Ordinals.
Let's go.
Ordinals are what, 50% of block space today?
Yeah, more I saw actually
Let's
today.
Let's go.
I mean, fees are absolutely ripping because Ordinals are also having
full blocks, Binance, full hearts. Shout out my
Binance
clear mind.
Listed Ordi. I don't know why they did that, but you know, so there's certainly Ordinals businesses. I think conventional business models. There's ZK rollups being built in Bitcoin.
Yeah, there's
now.
Two that I know of, Chainway and Kazar Labs, both
Alpen
trying
Labs,
to
Alpen Labs, shout out. Still in
also, there's
investors.
This BitVM thing that.
BitVM
has been,
is, I don't understand it.
Throw it in the group. Like it's,
someone smarter than me explain it.
There
to
are
me.
People that are trying to build on Bitcoin.
Look,
yes, absolutely.
I think there's been a sea change in the culture around you know, builders in Bitcoin. I think there's a lot of new folks building in Bitcoin that are unencumbered by like the ideological hangups of yesteryear. And I see a lot of conventional operating businesses being built there. I don't know if you guys have someone to add there.
They're just going
to
make the blocks bigger. I started running Bitcoin XT, and there's a lot of stuff to do.
So you're saying what? It's a reversion to the narratives from 2015 and 16?
No, I'm actually quite optimistic about it. I just don't know that there'll be any hard fork to include any of the logic that needs to happen.
Yeah, we might need a soft fork or two.
Yeah, I'm not super bullish on there being a hard fork to incorporate something.
I will say,
what about those sweet, sweet dividends?
To the miners, you mean? Or?
No, I mean, like, you know, I would like to know how Layer 2 Labs, for example,
with Drive
you know,
chains.
They raise money, right? VC money, angel investor money. Like, you know, what do they expect to get out of their investment? Is it a contentious hard fork with dividends? Are they fees on an ongoing basis? I think this is an open question.
But there's a lot of L2s that collect tons of fees, so
sure, but like it's different. Like you know, Bitcoin, Bitcoin's like a little bit different.
Do need a hard fork, right? Like, they raise money on the idea.
We're talking about like BIP 300, BIP 301. Right. We don't need to turn this into a technical flame war or anything. But
David has really highlighted the tension, though, right?
Yeah, for sure. This is a very good question.
Yeah,
from PubKey's perspective. Whenever I see like, you know, Udi or somebody say that like Lightning is completely broken, PubKey as a bar, as an operating business, we trained up all of our staff, all of our bartenders are equipped to accept Bitcoin over Lightning as a form of payment when the bar is busy. Right now you can go to the bar and you can pay in Lightning and it's not going to disrupt a thing. Right?
And it
An
works.
On-chain settlement, right? Waiting 10 minutes, you know, 20 minutes, 2 hours when the, like, you know, base layer is congested, it becomes a little bit more, like, complicated. But Lightning does work. We haven't had one single failure in a year of running Lightning as a form of payment at PubKey.
Okay,
this
let's
is working
let's do two more
us.
Questions. Let's just do two more questions because I know we've been here long. Someone here done...
Yes. Yeah.
Can we get...
Yes, guys. As we know, there's a lot of concerns over the stablecoin bill. I would like to know your view on the Wyoming stable token, and could this be a way that politicians could actually see the benefits of blockchain technology? But yeah, we'd like to definitely hear your view on that.
I support it. We did an interview on our show with Chris Rothfuss of Wyoming about it. My understanding is that it's not like fully baked in Wyoming. I know they had a job rack out to be the stablecoin czar. But I think the worry is that they would butt heads with the Fed if they issued a stablecoin. It would be potentially a very significant revenue driver in Wyoming if they did it. Matt?
So for those of you who aren't familiar, so Wyoming has proposed and actually passed legislation that would allow them to accept deposits from customers and issue a stablecoin. And so they would be able to capture the net interest income on that stablecoin. I think it would be an enormous revenue driver for the state of Wyoming if it actually launches. So, the question is, can that launch on a public blockchain? And what's the legal entity that needs to launch it? But so
That's
there's a lot of open
decided.
Questions.
I would use it.
For sure. I mean, it would be incredibly popular.
The Buffalo coin.
It would spur a lot of competition, I think,
buffalo
from other
coin?
States.
Yeah. What's the state flag? Has a buffalo on it, I think. I don't know.
Great question. One final question.
Delaware's just asleep at the wheel.
Anders? Tom, can we?
Where?
Can come up?
Which one? Come on up.
Anders, anyone. Whoever stands up first.
Two more questions.
Two more questions.
Keep it going. Dos Mas.
Cool. Dos Mas.
Hi.
Hey,
how do you anticipate the market to respond to the Fed interest rate hikes, specifically the institutional market, about stablecoins? Like, what I mean is there's no yield on stablecoins. Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Changing. So the stablecoin supply has been contracting because we've been in a high rates era and stables don't pay. So USDC supply has been selling off inversely with rates rising, as you know. Tether is different because Tether holders can't redeem, right, or don't want to. But the stablecoin market cap has actually stabilized recently, which is indicative of crypto yields returning and interest-bearing stablecoins and tokenized treasuries emerging.
Right.
So I think the effect of yields on stables has actually been deadened recently, because there now are ways to get interest-bearing stablecoins for investors. I won't shill it.
There actually are. There is
about a dozen.
I don't like to say RWA, but I'll say there are real-world asset-backed stables that pay yield.
Backed finance.
And also, the main issue is kind of dumb if you think about it, right? The people think that in the U.S. a yield-bearing stablecoin would be a security. That's the core issue.
Well, the SEC
I think it would be.
Yeah. Right.
So.
But last question?
They're being issued offshore now.
Sure.
So.
Frank from Southie, long time listener, first time caller.
Frank from Southie. Yes. So we're Castle Island, shout out.
Stephen Lynch's district, we're a little nervous about the turkey problem in your district. So can you give us an update on how the turkeys are faring?
So I was saying this earlier, I think it was some guy in Abington, Massachusetts in like the 1970s that reintroduced wild turkeys. They had been gone for like 50 years from what I understand. And I have a next door neighbor that probably consumes 25 Bud Lights a day and just sits in his backyard.
That's slander, Matt.
God bless.
I don't think he listens to the pod, but he feeds the turkeys. So it turns out that they just walk across the street into my yard. I've got this huge turkey problem. I've got two kids and, you know, there's poop all over the backyard.
They're aggressive, right? They're really aggressive. Kinda,
coming up.
It makes me want to move back to Southie, actually. So.
You can hunt the turkeys.
Well, I mean, when I lived in Boston and Cambridge, there were turkeys there, too, though. This is a genuine problem, and they're
scary. That's the thing. Is Elizabeth Warren doing anything about this?
What's your favorite dive bar in Southie? Your favorite dive bar in Southie?
That's good. So I used to spend a lot of time, it's not a dive bar, but I spent a lot of time at Loco. L Street Tavern is kind of where we used to hang out.
Kino at the bar?
Yeah, there's Kino.
Yeah, hell yeah, that's that bar. Let's go.
Not Southie, but shout out the Tam.
Oh, the Tam.
Shout out the Tam. Yep. That was my neck of the
woods. Love the Tam. Yeah,
when
same.
I lived in Horrible,
same, same.
Boston. Yeah.
That's awesome. Any other questions? All right, let's wrap.
Anders.
Hey guys, pretty simple one. You guys talked a lot about the ETF approval because that's going through all the news. And historically, in most industries, when ETFs are approved, it actually marks a local top for short and medium term price. And I believe the research that I did in 2019, it's a little north of 80%. I don't want to like quote myself exactly on that percentage, but I knew it was north of that. Is there a reason we think that might be different with this asset class than other asset classes when ETFs
are approved? I would direct your attention to an asset name of GLD, Anders. 2004 approval. Gold, I believe, went up after that. I know.
I think it's a good example, Anders, because there was no investment-grade gold product in the world, period, right? Like, you could buy gold. You could call up the big banks or the big brokerage firms and trade through their metals desk, and they would, like, park the gold for you at a bank. But, like, just like that, there is no investment-grade, widely accessible Bitcoin product that literally financial advisors can use, right? Like, we did research on this, and we found that there are $47 trillion in AUM currently at wealth managers, at banks and broker-dealers, and on RA platforms like Fidelity, Pershing, Schwab. None of those platforms effectively allow today any of these existing. They don't allow the trust. They don't allow the cash-settled ETFs. So they literally don't have access. And someone was saying this earlier, right, about a wealthy person owns all this crypto and their advisor literally can't even talk to them about it.
For the record.
That, to me, is the issue. It's about net accessibility. So I don't think there's going to be, like, a giant flood. You know, 90% of people aren't going to buy the Bitcoin ETF. But we said if 10% just do 1% of that ramp as those platforms turn it on, then it could be, you know, 14,
the difference
26,
is the cost,
38 billion in inflow is 1, 2, 3 years.
The cost of carry for Bitcoin is zero. If you look at HODL waves and the ability to take self-custody, like, there's a different dynamic that's being thrown
that's
into the mix
too.
Here.
Yeah.
For the record, I'm going to sell the news on the ETF guy. I'm actually with you. In the immediate term, sell the news.
Yeah. No, but I do think there is reason to, there is a large part of the asset management and, sorry, wealth management market that structurally
like
does not have access.
Under promise,
over
deliver.
That's the core
strategy.
Of my thesis
on
why we'll see inflows.
Give me the bull case. What's the price of Bitcoin?
I mean, the bull case is that financial advisors can't get paid right now for putting their customers into Bitcoin, and they're going to make a ton of money when they rotate them into one.
All right, we
allocation.
Have kept everyone long. We
buy
have,
a Trezor.
We
let's
have
go.
Shut down the kitchen, and it will reopen as soon as this ends. I really want to thank Thomas Pakia for hosting us at HubKey.
And thanks for coming out, guys.
Thank you, everyone.
Drain the kegs.
Thank you so much.
Tip your bartenders.
Castle Line Ventures, Galaxy Digital, Alex, Nick, Matt. Thank you, guys. Have fun.
All right. Tip your bartenders.
Thanks for listening to Galaxy Brains, the weekly podcast from Galaxy Research. If you enjoy the show, please like, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. To follow Galaxy Research, sign up for our weekly newsletter at gdr.email, read our content at galaxy.com/research, and follow us on Twitter at GLXY Research. See you next week.